Here is the week in Congressman John Faso news. Votes he took, positions he espoused, and protest rallies and town halls that he attended or not. This week, the website 538.com reports that John Faso votes with Donald Trump's positions 87.3% of the time, the same as last week. Congress was not in session this week, with no votes in the House of Representatives.
Dan Friedman is reporting for the Times Union. U.S. Representative John Faso continues to push what he says is a link between food stamps and crime as part of an effort to impose stricter work requirements on Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program recipients. The Kinderhook Republican claims the program is an easy target for fraudsters and drug dealers. At a recent Ulster County GOP brunch in Kingston, Faso said local sheriffs, and I quote, "tell me every drug dealer they arrest has a SNAP card in his pocket," end quote. Faso said drug dealers aren't, and I quote, "declaring income," end quote, evoking scattered snickers in the audience. He said, and I quote, "that's a lot of what's going on," end quote. The audio of the congressman's remarks was captured by an opposition research tracker for Democratic super PAC American Bridge, according to Friedman. The comment was offered as an explanation for why he is leading the Republican push on Capitol Hill to strengthen work requirements in a program that subsidizes food purchases for 42.2 million people nationwide and almost 3 million in New York. Nevin Cohn, a City University of New York health policy professor who studies SNAP, said Faso and other Republicans are perpetuating myths about the program. Among the able-bodied who get SNAP, 75% work or are between jobs. The vast majority have children or older relatives at home. Cohen said, and I quote, "they have one or two breadwinners who work in low-wage jobs. They are poor," end quote. A report last month by the nonpartisan Congressional Research Service said fraud in the program is, and I quote, "rare," end quote, and that such cases, and I quote, "represent a relatively small fraction of SNAP overall," end quote.
George had mentioned some of the issues that we're facing at the state level and the national level. And there's no doubt the other side is very energized. And why are they energized? Because they're determined to reverse the outcome of the 2016 election. That's what this is really about, folks. When you really cut to the chase, the Democrats, if they win control of the House of Representatives, the very first item on the agenda is going to be impeachment. And they haven't shown any particular thing that would qualify as an impeachable offense. They haven't even gotten close to it. Excess tweeting is not an impeachable offense, last time I looked. And I think what we have to do is, there is no doubt there's excessive polarization in our country. And what I try to do in Congress, I have my principles, I have the values that I grew up with my parents, and my mother in particular, who imbued in me a love of history and politics and the entire process that we are so blessed to have in this country. And you know, I actually grew up a Democrat. The very first, and I hate to disclose my age like this, but the very first political experience I had was in 1960. I was 8 years old. A John F. Kennedy for President rally at a Long Island train station where we lived. I think it was Belmore or Wantagh or someplace like that. And I still have the button, Kennedy for President. And I keep a lot of political buttons, and that's one of the ones I treasure. Not just because of the historic nature of it, because I was there with my mother. And she's the one that really taught me things like, and I love she was Irish, my father was Italian, she was about 5'9", my Italian father was about 5'5". And I love the things that she taught me about, you can catch more flies with honey than you can with vinegar. And if you don't have something good to say about someone, say nothing at all. And the one I always remember when I occasionally came home too late, she would say, "I have a bone to pick with you, young man." That's when I was in college and I thought I was free and I'd come home on vacations. Didn't work that way with my mother. The point is that we've got to recognize, and I think all of us in this room recognize this, and Ken Rock does and George Amador does, they realize that we have our principles and our values. We also realize we fight hard for our principles. But in a process that we live in our country, where it's a very divided politically and certainly in Congress, we have to talk to the other side. in order to try to find common ground. And this is the in the tradition of what Ronald Reagan used to do with Tip O'Neill. It's in the tradition of what Harry Truman did with a Republican Congress right after World War II, when they're dealing with Europe in chaos after the destruction of World War II. It's in the, some of the best tradition of our country. And I think, unfortunately, we get this, but so many folks right now on the other side, they preach tolerance, but they are the most intolerant people if you don't agree with them, and if you don't subscribe to everything that they want. And so now we have seven candidates running on the other side, and I say they're on the far left and the far, far left. And it is remarkable, the things that they're saying. It is simply remarkable. Medicare for all, that's one of the arguments. What they would do is they would jeopardize Medicare, the viability of the existing system, which has financial stresses in it because of demographics in our country, not because of Democrat and Republican, but because of demographics. They would jeopardize the solvency of the existing Medicare system by bringing everyone into it. It simply wouldn't work. They also want to end all employer-provided health insurance. So if you're working and you have employer-provided health insurance, they want to end that. They think they can, through the government, make it so much better. We know from experience that this is highly unlikely to take place, highly unlikely to occur. But yet they're running around with a proposal that was a Bernie Sanders proposal that would cost trillions of dollars, would literally bankrupt our country. We have financial stresses as it is, and they just simply repeat these slogans. You know, I'm committed to try to fix and improve our healthcare system, but not to simply turn it all over to the government in a system that would be completely untenable financially. The other thing, we're working right now on the Farm Bill. I serve on the Agriculture Committee in the House. We have a bipartisan bill, and then about a month ago, the Democrats stopped talking to us at all because we have a very modest but reasonable proposal that says if you are able-bodied and you're between 18 and 60 years old and you don't have little children at home, that we expect, if you're going to collect government assistance, that you be in a job training program if you don't have a job, and that you be in work. You know, just the other day, the county announced, and I was talking to your district attorney about this a little while ago, county announced the indictment of six people here in the county on food stamp fraud. And this happens in all over the country. It's not the predominant. It's not the every person is doing this, but there's a coterie of people out there who are taking advantage of the system. So what we're saying is that if you want to be in this system, if you want the government taxpayer assistance, we're going to require, if you're able-bodied, you don't have tiny kids at home, we're going to require that you be in an employment training program, that you work. This is common sense. And you know, when I talk to most average Democrats in this district, and we talk about some of these things, they're 100% for it. But the far left says no, they're not going to go along with that because they think it's punitive and they think it's onerous and they think somehow we're going to take food out of the mouths of children. Far from it. A family is much better off if the able-bodied adult in that family is working and has a chance at self-sufficiency than being dependent on the government. And so what we're trying to do, we're actually modernizing this. Right now the government says if you have a vehicle that's worth more than $4,650, we count that, we'll disqualify you. That was set in the 70s. We're going to raise that to $12,000. And we're going to let a poor family keep up to $2,000 in a savings account. Because if your kid has to go to the doctor, they go to the dentist, or they need braces, or your car needs new brakes. You know, when you're a poor person, you got to drive 30 miles to get to your job. You know what? You need a car that can get you there. So we're modernizing the program so that it's better for people. But we also want to make sure that dependency is not encouraged, and we want to encourage independence. And that's one of the fundamental differences between those of us on our side and a lot of the folks on the far radical left. They believe the government is the solution to every problem. We believe the individual and the family and the community and the church, that those are the bedrocks of what makes us a strong community. So I just want to say thank you, all of you, for being here. We have Judge McCarthy, who's on the appellate division. You know, this poor guy, he can't come out once every 14 years. And it's kind of like, you know, he comes out like a locust, and he's out there. And it's now his time to come out. And but it's very important that we have judges who will interpret the law and not make the law. And that's the kind of judge he is. He's fair, he's decent, he's honest. We have your sheriff here, who is an absolutely marvelous, hardworking sheriff. And I am so glad to see him here. He's really sheriffs around our district, the 11 counties, we're bigger than Connecticut geographically in our district. Sheriffs around this district, speaking of SNAP and food stamps, they tell me that virtually every drug dealer they arrest has got a food stamp card in his pocket. You know, because he's not declaring any income. And that's really what, that's a lot of what's going on. I mean, so I'm really glad the sheriff is here. I'm so pleased that Chris Tagg is here. He is working hard. Anyone that you know in Saugerties, any person, if you can persuade them, if you can cajole them, if you can convince them, or you can trick them to come out and vote for us on Tuesday, please do it, because I've known him, like George, I've known Chris for many years. He's an honest, decent, hardworking guy, worked himself up from the bottom in the company, started as a laborer, now is the general manager of a company with 200 employees. Really solid person, understands what it is to work for a living. So I just want to tell you thank you. It truly has been an honor for me the last 15 months to represent the people. I listen to everyone. I respond to everyone. And don't let these folks on the other side perpetuate the lie that somehow we are not listening to them. I listen to everyone. And I try to take what everyone says into account as to how we conduct ourselves in office. And every day I go in there, I just kind of pinch myself and think, I'm walking in under that dome of the Capitol. And it's not so much that I'm there and it's in Washington. It's that I'm thinking of my mother and my father. You know, my father was a TV repairman, and he was a janitor. And he was a guy who could fix anything. And my mother worked as a bank teller. When it five kids, she went to work, and all she could ever get was an assistant manager job, ultimately, in the bank, because at that time, women weren't allowed to be bank managers. We're talking about in the early 70s, when she went back into the workforce. And so I understand the struggles that people have and the issues that people have to try to make sure they can advance themselves, but we have to just go out and speak the truth as to the issues that we face in our communities and in our country. Defending our country against the threats that we have from abroad. Making sure America is strong internally. If we don't have a strong economy, we will never be able to protect ourselves and perpetuate our way of life. This great, wonderful country that we have, which, yes, we have our flaws. Yes, we have our imperfections, but this is still the place where people all around the world want to come, and where you can still make it. If you can make it in America, you can make it. And that's what the great thing. And so we have an obligation, a solemn obligation, to make sure we leave for our kids and our grandchildren a better country than what we found. That's why I'm running. That's why I'm down there. That's why Mary Frances is really great. She puts up with me in the schedule that we have. But that's why we do it, because we really believe in our country. We believe in self-government. We believe in our system. And I always think of my mother saying, try to catch more flies with honey than you do with vinegar. Thank you so much. God bless you. God bless America.
You can download or play the full audio of Faso's remarks at the Ulster County Republican Spring Brunch 2018 on the WGXC Newsroom website, wgxc.org, and read the full story in the Times Union.
Chris McKenna at the fray outlines the latest kerfuffle between Representative John Faso, Republican of Kinderhook, and New York Governor Andrew Cuomo. Faso voted with all Republicans, 26-20, to move the Farm Bill out of the Agricultural Committee. The bill makes work requirements for anyone receiving food stamps much more strict. Cuomo said, via press release, that Faso is, quote, resorting to the same divisive rhetoric we hear all too often in Washington today. Faso's assault on families in need and his despicable and cheap characterizations may please his party leadership, but they are against everything New York stands for, end quote, Cuomo said, causing a similar but very different press release to emerge quickly from the Faso camp. Quote, Cynthia Nixon has caused Andrew Cuomo to become unhinged, end quote, Faso wrote. Quote, his criticism of enhanced work requirements for the SNAP program, while at the same time increasing the ability of a food stamp household to own a safe car and maintain a small savings account, show that this governor prefers divisive rhetoric over governing, end quote. McKenna guesses that there have been at least four press release wars between Cuomo and Faso this year as we enter month five. In New York, more than 2.8 million people receive SNAP benefits or food stamps. And McKenna concludes, this whole argument is just for show. Quote, the SNAP proposals have little chance of passing in the narrowly divided Senate, where supporters would need all or most Republicans, plus some Democrats, on board to reach the 60-vote threshold, end quote. He writes, read the full story at the fray.
Faso for Congress, the re-election campaign of Republican U.S. Representative John Faso, announced May 2nd the endorsement of the first-term congressman by the New York Conservative Party. New York State Conservative Party Chairman Mike Long said, and I quote, John Faso is a principled leader who is focused on improving the private sector economy and bringing jobs back to upstate New York. The voters know they can trust John Faso's word, and the Conservative Party is proud to stand with him again, end quote. Faso serves on the Budget, Agricultural, and Transportation and Infrastructure Committees. He and his wife, Mary Frances, have made Kinderhook their home for more than 30 years.
Patricia Doxey is reporting for the Daily Freeman. Objections filed last month to the nominating petitions of three candidates in the 19th congressional district race have been ruled on and are expected to be made official by the State Board of Elections on May 3rd. The board is recommending that petitions filed by Democrat Erin Collier and Green Party candidate Stephen Greenfield be ruled valid, but has recommended commissioners reject the petition filed by Chad McAvoy to appear on the Women's Equality Party line. The objection to Collier's petition was filed by Barbara Sides, a voting member of the Gardner Democratic Committee. She claimed Collier's petitions contained, quote, serious multiple errors, end quote. The board staff found that 1,451 of the nearly 2,500 signatures submitted by Collier were valid, 200 more than needed. In the case of Greenfield, 96 signatures out of the 112 submitted were found to be valid, one more than the 95 required to make the ballot. The board determined that McAvoy fell short of his required six signatures after it was determined one of the signers lived outside of the district. Read the full story in the Daily Freeman.
Bloomberg reports that actor Diane Neal, for the second time, started her independent congressional campaign to take the seat of Representative John Faso, this time this past week. She says her campaign needs to gather 3,500 signatures in the 35 days after June 19th in order to get on the ballot. Quote, I thought running without a party affiliation was the best way to make a statement and also the best way to win, unquote, Neal said. Quote, I'm not going to have access to all these things that the party machine has, but at the same time, I don't have to be beholden to anyone but the people in my district, unquote. Read the full story at the Bloomberg website.